You're listening to Real Crime, the Movie Sleuth Podcast.
And we're rolling.
We are.
We are.
This is the Real Crime Podcast.
Oh my God, you're excited about this.
I am so happy to be here with you guys.
I'm aroused right now.
I'm aroused because there's no vaginas here tonight.
It's weird. I feel like a 70-year-old man that just popped three Viagra.
Yeah, we're female-less tonight.
If boners last more than 4 hours, call more ladies.
Now that was good.
You ever heard that old Buddy Hackett joke? I'm not going to pretend like it's a quick one, but it's funny. Seeing that we're talking about hard-ons, Buddy Hackett told this joke, and it's one of the funniest things I've ever heard. This guy got now the listening audience, I don't know if you guys are familiar with a priapism.
Yes.
Okay, it's a common word now, but back 20, 30 years ago when Buddy Hackett wrote this joke, you know, it wasn't really, you know, a lot of people didn't know what a priapism was. So, you know, this guy gets a priapism. And he goes to the pharmacist and goes to the counter and says, a female pharmacist walks out. And she's like, can I help you, sir? And he's like, well, ma'am, I'm very sorry, but can I talk to the man pharmacist? And she's like, sir, I have been a pharmacist for 15 years. I own this pharmacy with my sister. I would consider it kind for you to come to me with any problem that you'd have to talk to any man about. I'm a professional. He's like, well, okay. So he opens his coat up and shows and how Buddy Hackett does it. I can't do it justice. Shows his wandolier, right? And he's like, and the lady looks at it and goes, oh. And he's like, well, it's been like this for about 5 days. And I don't think it's going to go away. I'm wondering if there's something you can give me for it. And the lady's like, let me go in the back and talk to my sister. So the pharmacist goes back and comes out about 10 minutes later. And she says, we've agreed to give you $20,000 and half share in the pharmacy. Ba-dum-tsh. Come on. What, you didn't get it? Come on, guys. Give me a fucking break. What I'm getting right now, listening audience, is very polite laughter from these two slapdicks I work with, which we have Andrew here this evening. Andrew, how are you today?
I am doing wonderful. How are you?
Really good. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. We had the ladies had other things going on, so Mr. Andrew decided to hop in here and give us a hand. And this week, oh, man, and I'm really...
Jobs.
Blow jobs.
And they listen to this show. We just fucking trash them.
Just
go on.
My name is Kirsten. I'm going to tell you about the minivan.
My name's Michelle.
I got a bad attitude.
No, we all got crap that happens. That's cool. No problem.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you here, ladies, but you're not here.
Dick pics.
All night long, baby.
Yep. Like that montage at the end of Nymphomaniac Volume 1.
So.
Dick.
I'm actually more bummed about that. Keep that in the background. It's a good soundtrack for the show. I'm actually bummed. In all seriousness, I'm bummed they're not here because they're going to miss out on this really great topic that Chris. You're the one that kind of came up with this, which I think it's something we were bound to run into, you know, in our 19th episode here. We're 19 now. It's like the best villains in movies, like, you know, in all these great films that we watch and love. What are some of your favorite villains, right? Which just totally piqued my interest. And I actually, like, you can hear it. There's actually a piece of paper in front of us.
That's astounding. That's astounding for you.
We fucking prepped.
We got our cue cards on hand.
We prepped for this show. And I'm glad we did because there was, you know, and even just before the show we were chatting. And Andrew shows up. And you kind of came in cold on this one. And I'm sorry, guys. I'm, like, still coming over this thing.
Blowjobs will do that.
Yeah, you know, you think it would just be a Roto-Rooter and just knock it right out. No.
Yeah.
But you came in cold, and immediately you came with a couple of just genius of your own that I totally just missed the ball on when I was putting my list together. So, yeah, it's going to be fun here. Villains, though. Villains in movie, and you guys feel free to just knock me down on this. You know, obviously they're what make films interesting. I think there always has to be the villain in any story, or it don't have to be a person like necessarily. And we're gonna show that to you tonight.
Yeah,
it can be a thing, but it has to be an opposing force that you know sometimes you can even identify with to a certain degree.
I always look at villains kind of, you know, villains are almost like a hook in a really good pop song.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's the same
you
idea.
Always
You're
get
right.
sucked into the villain. No pun intended. No pun intended. But seriously, yeah. A great villain makes a great movie, typically.
Yeah.
They're just...
They're the source of conflict for the story.
Exactly.
And you're right. I think that's a really great way to look at it, Chris. They are the hook. You know, if you think of it in a song, it's what pulls you into the song. And I've talked about this thing, and I'm going to keep talking about it for however long we do this thing, is this element of, it's called chaos drama. You know, and people are always drawn to chaos drama as opposed to, well, this is just great and everything is wonderful. You know, people are more interested in the conflict of things. And
the bad side.
Yeah, the bad thing. I mean, it doesn't mean you're a pessimistic person. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It's just that's what you find interesting. And I think that's just part of the human condition to do that.
Curiosity about what makes that kind of evil tick.
Yeah, really. And that's, I mean, yeah, there's people that have made entire professions out of shit like that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what they do. They analyze the mind of serial killers, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know, and I know on the surface, people are like, oh, man, that guy's fucking weird. He all he does is talk to serial killers, and that's all he does. Well, no, it's a fascinating mind. I mean, and maybe someday we can cure people with this type of thing. Who knows, right? So it isn't just all because I'm interested and I think it's cool. It's, you know, there are other reasons for this. So yeah, it doesn't mean you're bad. It's what makes movies really cool and interesting. And you know what? We're just gonna like hit this thing right in the face, I think, because before, like, we were talking outside, Andrew, and you immediately go, oh, villains? Oh, well, Albert Spica from The Cook. Michael Gambon. I mean,
yeah.
I'm like, how the fuck did I miss that? How the fuck did I miss that when I was making my list, man?
I'll kill him, I'll cook him, and I'll eat him.
If you haven't seen The Cook, it's easily one of the, to me, it's one of my favorite movies. It's one of the damnedest disturbing films I've ever seen, too. The way that thing comes together, and I'm not going to spoil it for anybody.
It's The Cook, The Thief,
His Wife and Her Lover.
Yeah.
I think I've only ever seen that movie one time, and it was probably when around the time it first came out, which is what, the 80s, right?
1989, I think.
89, 90, something like that? Yeah.
So it's been a very long time, so I can't really associate
film.
With that one, but...
NC-17. It's still rated NC-17 even
very
now.
Controversial film. Helen Mirren in her prime, too. I'm going to be a male for a second. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. She was just astounding in that movie. But that character, Albert Spica, played by Michael Gambon in that movie, there is nothing to like about that guy. Without spoiling the movie, there's just nothing to like about this character. He's evil, but he's also, you know, and you can attest to this, Andrew, he tries to be this proper and, you know, this real high class person, but you can tell that he has no idea how to do this. He's just trying to play a part.
He talks a great game throughout the movie.
He can't do it. He just has, he's stupid. He's ignorant. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know what he's doing. So that makes him even, to me, more detestable, because if there's something I don't like, it's ignorance from people, especially when they're willfully ignorant. And, you know, they put it out there for you just to look at and admire. So the guy's not only evil and a horrible person, but he's also just a freaking ignorant bastard on top of all that. At the same time, trying to portray this, like, really elegant lifestyle and personality that he thinks that he is. And he's not. He's a total fucking piece of shit. So
and
that's, wow, man.
Both his behavior and his attitude just get worse as the movie goes on pretty soon he's... even committing violence against a minor at one of the film's more shocking scenes.
Yeah, very hard to watch. The Scream, and again, I'm trying not to spoil anything, but The Scream, which whoever that kid was that played that role, I don't know his name.
Yeah.
Do you know him?
He sings throughout the movie.
Yeah, it's beautiful. But that child, the acting this child did.
He lets out like this really high pitched scream it's terrifying.
It just fucks your head up because you know what's happening and you're like, you know? So there's nothing to like about Albert Spica. And we really kind of just like dove into this thing, like right into the bottom of the pool, I think, because that's one of the ones to me is like, oh, that's fucking horrible.
This actually kind of reminds me of another character that we did not put on this list.
What's that?
Think about Harvey Keitel in Bad Lieutenant.
Oh my God.
There is nothing of good quality about that person.
Show me how you suck a guy's cock. Show me. Show me. Girls like sucking dick? I've done so many fucking bad things.
Seriously,
you're right.
Though,
yeah. Horrible.
He's horrifying. He is a villain, and the entire movie is about the bad guy.
Yeah.
The entire movie is about the bad guy.
Yeah.
There's nothing about that person that you can like.
Yeah.
You can't associate with him. All you can do is watch a series of awful things that he does for an hour and a half.
That's all it is. And, you know, it's a real juxtaposition, obviously, too. And without spoiling anything, and this won't spoil it. I mean, obviously, Harvey Keitel plays a cop.
Mm.
Yeah.
So it's this, you know, bad and good thing. You know, he's supposed to be this servant of the community. But he's a total son of a bitch the whole way through, and he's a perverted, evil person.
He's really pathetic and disgusting in almost every scene in the movie, too. He's slouching around and just looks doped up, and there's even just some scenes of him sitting on the couch waiting for his next heroin hit.
Yeah.
And the shot goes on, and you just feel dirty watching it.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that's up on that, you know, all those like disturbing film lists too. Bad Lieutenant always makes those lists. And to his credit, Harvey Keitel played that fucking role like a total pro. He knew what to do with that, and it really come across, and you really feel how horrible.
Mm-hmm. That's Harvey Keitel though, because he can take any role like that and run with it.
Just attack it.
Yeah,
genius. Completely.
Total genius. That's a good one. Good pick. I'm glad you put that one down. And that wasn't even on our list here. What do we got? Oh, geez. I listed like 1,000. You know what? Fuck it. Hell 9,000. Let's just get really dirty here. As I mentioned that a few minutes ago, it doesn't always have to be a person. There are things in the Hell 9,000 from 2001, A Space Odyssey. I mean, we all have seen that movie. That is a really interesting villain.
Mm-hmm. The idea of it being asexual, unemotional, and really just our vision of perfection. We created him. We made him the best that we can be. Yeah. It's everything about ourselves that we seek to perfect coming back to bite us in the ass.
Yeah, and we find, you know, you find out in 2010, you know, kind of what the reason was for that.
Which I didn't We didn't need to know.
They always do that shit, though.
But you just nailed it, though, Andrew. It's this idea of this is... we're supposed to make the perfect machine here that can solve all of our problems, and it's still a machine.
If anything, at one point in the movie, he's conversing with the other astronauts, and they're even more robotic and detached than he is.
They are!
Like,
you're right.
Hal is having he's using Dave Bowman as a crying towel, going over his neuroses mid-movie before he gets all power hungry and starts ordering them to take the AE-35 unit off the satellite.
Mm-hmm.
I think the really cool thing about Hal, though, is there's really no physicality to Hal either. He's more of like a sentient being.
It's just that red eye.
That's it. And that's pretty damn scary that something with no physicality can have that much control.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while since I've seen that movie, too. I need to watch it again.
Watch that once a month.
Yeah?
God, I have to. I'm hooked on it, man.
That's my favorite movie, so I've already seen it a few times this year.
this week. Today.
I need a couple hits off 2001.
I watched it on the way here on my phone in the car. Nearly got in 3 accidents. But yeah, that's a great example of a villain that, you know, it isn't a tangible person that you can see and talk to and watch him interact with other people.
Machines, a controlling being that has no physicality.
Yeah, a machine that basically, it's taken over.
You know, I see on the list that we had mentioned Regan McNeil in The Exorcist, but it's really not Regan. It's the entity that possesses her.
Yeah.
Which, in a way, you could say that, too, takes away the physicality of it. I mean, even though everything's happening on set, it's all beyond her control. It's this unseen force that just takes control of everything. Same with The Entity with Barbara Hershey.
Fuck, if you remember that movie. What a flick. The book's amazing too, but the movie really, holy crap.
The Entity, I mean, that goes down as probably in the top 10 haunting movies of all time.
Yeah, dude.
But that goes in the top 10 horror movies of all time, too.
And, you know, you don't hear a lot of people mentioning that movie too much.
Because it's kind of a... It's
a sleeper.
It's a sleeper. Yeah. It's a second thought. People always want to talk about The Exorcist or Nightmare on Elm Street.
The entity is so disturbing.
Yeah.
And really, really uncomfortable to watch for... And it has, rape scene after rape scene when you don't see it actually happen. You just know it's going on with this invisible force.
Yeah. When she's being raped and you see the hands moving on
grabbing
her breast.
Thanks to Stan Winston's visual effects work,
That shit freaks me out.
Yeah,
that shit freaks me out.
And that's the one scene I think you're talking about where, you know, her boyfriend, I forgot the guy's name, he comes in there and he can't do anything. He can't see anyone.
And he just walks out like a bastard.
Yeah. He doesn't know that he's losing his mind.
Actually, there's a fight. He's trying to knock the thing off and winds up hitting her with a chair.
He hit her with a chair.
Yeah. And
but that guy's coming unwound the whole flick, though. I mean, because do I believe her? Do I not believe her? Mm-hmm. And he's seeing this happening. He's seeing, like you said, the handprints, which is like, yeah, that's hard to get out of your head when you see it.
I didn't see the entity probably until... I would say the mid-90s, but the first time I saw that movie, I was hooked. I was like, this is a good haunting movie. This movie is freaky as shit. Yeah, yeah.
Blake was the first one who told me about it, actually.
Really?
Yeah. And incidentally, there's a bit of a movie connection between the villain and the entity, or the entity per se, and Christoph Waltz's character in Inglourious Basterds. When he shows up for meeting up with the film curator, the film theater owner.
Yeah.
You hear the music from the entity playing on the soundtrack as he's standing over her. It's before he brings out the dessert and he's saying, wait for the cream.
Wait for the cream.
Yeah. Yeah. She's flashing back to her family being murdered and you hear the guitar strumming from the entity playing on the soundtrack.
You're right. Holy crap, I had no idea about that, man.
Did we even add Christoph Waltz from Inglourious Basterds onto this list?
I'm sorry, Chris.
Talk about a creepy Nazi bastard fuck.
But he's so giddy and charming.
He is.
Delighted.
Yeah. And he played that role, just brilliantly. And yeah, you're right. There was such a joyfulness about that character, about his work.
He's happy to be evil. He's happy to be evil.
That opening scene where they're smoking pipes together, he's like, I think I'll smoke too. And he takes out this giant, ridiculously oversized pipe.
Sizing up
his prey.
I thought that was a really great, that scene especially, which is like the opening scene of the film. Because that scene alone with the pipes, because he's just smoking, the French guy's just smoking this little pipe, very humble looking straw pipe. And he's like, breaks out that fucking cannon.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're kind of seeing again, good and evil. Here's the humble dairy farmer, and here is the totalitarian Jew hunter, right?
Right.
Good and evil right there. Christoph Waltz, that character was absolutely genius in Inglourious Basterds. Another great call out that I fucking dropped the ball on. Sorry.
Can't get them all, man.
So we were talking about movies with villains that you kind of want to root for. You find yourself empathizing with them. I'd say Alexander Delarge from Clockwork Orange and Li Wujin are probably the most, for a viewer, the most conflicting villains that you can watch, because both movies, these characters, are ostensibly evil when you first meet them, but as the movie goes on, you find yourself more and more empathetic with their plight. And they don't change who they are, but our opinion of them changes the more we get to know about them.
Well, the environment changes, too, I think. I mean, around them, things are changing around them. They're not changing, but, what's being revealed to you is what's changing. And I think that's where you start to, your opinion of them skews. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Another one, I mentioned this, too, was Jeff Culver, that's the character name from Hard Candy, which is played by Patrick Wilson. That's another one I mentioned where it's the same idea. We didn't talk about that before the show, but the environment is kind of what changes, I think. Mm-hmm. And the same thing happens with that character with Patrick Wilson's character in Hard Candy.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, you're like, well, wait, dude, this fucking bitch is crazy. What the hell?
But we're never, with Hard Candy, it's never really revealed if he even did anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's another crazy kind of part of it. Like, you're meant to believe that he's committed some horrendous crime.
Yeah.
And she's torturing him for it.
Yeah.
But do they ever reveal whether he was really guilty of doing anything or not?
They don't.
Yeah.
No.
It's kept up in the open.
I don't want to spoil too much, but there is, towards the end of the film with that whole murder thing they were talking about.
Yeah.
Mm. He does reveal that he stood there and watched it happen.
Okay, okay.
And he took pictures. That did happen.
That's
I don't
right.
want to try
okay.
to fuck people up here, but
people have seen it by now, yeah. though, so I'm not too concerned.
So there
about
is
that,
but still, I don't care. Through a bulk of that film, I was going, dude, this fucking bitch, Ellen Page, is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
I don't do that to him. Nope. Well, so a lot of people deserve
well,
that.
You're
it was definitely tougher for male viewers than female
Fuck
viewers.
Yeah, and you do cringe. You cringe through that, man. It's, I mean, it really, how that was shot and how they set that up just really kind of got under your skin to a certain degree. But that's another one, just like you're talking about.
Where
you start to sympathize with him.
your allegiance changes as the movie progresses with
well,
characters.
Yeah.
I mean, even with A Clockwork Orange with Alex,
yeah.
he's a terrible, terrible, terrible violent criminal, rape and murder and beatings and all that shit.
Yeah. And he's having such a wonderful time doing it. He's like a kid
yeah.
in a candy store.
Yeah. But then once his character starts to change, once he is jailed mm-hmm. and being put through all this reprogramming and, yeah. Torture,
yeah.
you know, then you actually start to sympathize with him. And it's kind of funny, too, because whenever you in real life see crimes happening, rapes and murders and all this stuff, you always say that guy deserves to be castrated or somebody should, you know, put a bullet in that guy's fucking head.
Yeah.
And then when you start seeing it on the screen and you see that there's actually something happening to these people for the crimes they've committed,
yeah.
you do. You typically start to sympathize with
them.
Yeah. So it makes you kind of question, how would you actually deal with that crap in reality?
Well, yeah, justice justice is just not that, the idea of justice, which I think is bullshit to a certain degree too. But that's what you always hear about people. Whenever something's bad done to their family member, they go on the news and they say, I want justice. I want justice, which is just a pretty way of saying, I want revenge. Eye for an eye.
Yep.
Right. It's not quite that simple, I don't think. And you're right, Chris. If you were really put in front of something like that, what would you do? Or how, you know, if you're being presented that, like, okay, well, here's the justice.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Well, if it disturbs you that much in a movie, imagine it really happening in real life.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How would you respond, right? It's not quite that simple, I agree. I want to throw this one out there. And this is one I don't know if anybody really thought about this, but... to me, it's top of the list here, actually. It's alphabetical, but it's top of the list is Albert from The Color Purple, played by Danny Glover.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. I mean, the whole movie from beginning to end is just a...
It's aggressive.
It's this battle of wills between him domineering over Whoopi Goldberg's character and her trying to find some... semblance of freedom and meaning in her life as he continues to stomp whatever freedoms out of her that he can.
Well, I just belittle. I mean, it was physical abuse. It was mental abuse. There's a scene, the one, I guess you'd call it sex scene in that movie, which really kind of, to me, brought it home. And I'm not really, I'm still kind of like, look at sex scene. Yay. You know, but that's,
oh, you love it.
There's the sex scene in that movie where you see like Whoopi Goldberg's character. Well, it was Whoopi, like young Whoopi Goldberg's character.
Still don't want to see her.
There goes the keyboard. Oh my God.
Oh, knew no. that was going to happen.
We talked about this before the show, you hump. What's wrong with you? Just for the listening audience. Okay. Chris is going to play the keyboard. Yeah. Put it on the floor. Fucking jerk off.
Suck it.
Okay, well, at least it didn't break, thank goodness. But what I was saying was, you know, in that sex scene, and I don't know if you remember this or not, Andrew, is, you know, they just show, like, this rickety old bed. And they show her kind of, like, they just show her character at first, like, just, you know, laying there.
Yeah.
And then Danny Glover kind of comes down, and his hand just kind of falls on her head.
Yeah.
Like, just very slapping her on the head, and then he's just kind of like... And he, you know, okay, he climaxes, right? And then he climaxes, which, you know, we all know that's pretty awesome. But then he looks at her.
It's a great experience.
He looks at her and goes, Jesus Christ, and just rolls off of her, right? And there's an actual, like, scene, like later in the film, with Shug Avery, that character, like, you know, the singer.
Yeah.
And they talked about, like, you know, so, you know, they talked about sex. And she's like, well, you know, I never liked it or anything like that. I've never liked having sex with Mr. They called him Mr., right? And she's like, well, then you're still a virgin. You know, you've never really ever been in love before. So that's that whole movie. And it goes to his kids. You know, Whoopi Goldberg is in that film. Not Whoopi Goldberg. Oprah Winfrey's in that
Oprah
film.
Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah.
And that ties, you know, Albert's virus of his shitty fucking behavior and how horrible of a husband and man that he is spreads to his children. And he, you know, there's scenes where he's, you know, Harpo, his kid, he's telling him he's got to beat her. You know, and shit like that. So that character to me was one of the worst ever, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and The Color Purple is one of the only films I think I've ever actually ever made me cry at the end. I mean, really, I did cry my eyes out when I saw it, just because she was released from this fucking hand over her whole life almost, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that character, and Danny Glover, I mean, again, genius. The guy was absolutely brilliant in that movie. So yeah, another really terrible villain in films. And not really a, you know, that's not one of them, you know, aggressive. It's just a horrible guy.
Yeah, it's a more of a mental type of villainy, correct?
Psychological abuse.
Psychological.
Well, another. I'm sorry. I don't want to go on. I don't want to put you guys to sleep. But there's another cut in that movie that I found really interesting too. Like, she goes to that house and it's a total shithole.
Yeah.
And they show this whole like couple of minutes of her doing all this cleaning and getting everything together. And they show this beautiful kitchen now. It's all clean and organized and all the pots are hung up. And then you see a couple of dirty, muddy, slush, wet feet slam onto the table.
Mm-hmm.
And all this shit goes everywhere, right? Which is just another way to show, like, he don't fucking appreciate anything. I mean, any beauty that's put in front of him, he just tries to destroy it, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that another great villain that that stuck with me ever since I saw The Color Purple.
Annie Wilkes.
What?
Annie Wilkes.
From Misery.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Kathy Bates' character. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's sort of, some people have been comparing internet culture, geek culture to her, because the idea of not the fans not getting what they want and raising holy hell, in this case, very literally.
Yeah. I mean, he, you know, as we know in Misery, he didn't do what she wanted with her favorite character.
So.
And that cost him a lot of pride.
It cost him two broken legs.
Yeah,
That was
James Caan.
Yeah.
James Caan played that character in that movie. He did a really good job in that movie.
Kathy Bates won an Academy Award for her performance in that movie.
She is so fucking twisted in that movie.
Yeah.
Seriously. She is awesome in that flick. Awesome. And that's another one of those movies that you can pick up at any time and watch it, and the movie is timeless. It's absolutely timeless.
Yeah.
Because a situation could happen now.
Totally.
It could happen anytime. It
could be abducted like that.
Honestly, I'm surprised shit like that really hasn't happened with all this crazy stuff we see going on.
Well, that character and the environment with that, too, I find really interesting, because the initial thing we see is a rescue. You know, he had an accident, and she rescued him and nursed him back to health and helped him. So you have the beautiful part of that, but then it just, you know, over time,
it completely changes.
It goes ugly. Yeah, it just gets ugly.
At first, she's really eccentric, but then everything, the true colors come out the moment she reads his book and finds out that he's killed off her favorite character.
Yeah.
And after it just gets more and more bizarre and oppressive from there.
Well, in the film, too, like, you know, her big, you know, that character, Annie Wilkes, didn't swear.
Mm-hmm.
You're not allowed to curse, right?
Yeah.
And that's when she said, she's like, the cursing I don't like. He's like, well, that's how people talk, you know?
Yeah. Well,
no, you need to get the cursing out. So there was always that thread going through the movie of like how she doesn't like to curse. And there's scenes where she's arguing with people in town and she's like saying all these dumb, really funny little insults, but they're
very clean.
They're very clean, right?
Mm-hmm. But
at the end, when, you know, he burns it in front of her and all that horrible shit goes on in the book, and she fucking finally flips and says, I'm going to kill you, you fucking cocksucker. I mean, it just comes out of her.
Yeah.
Right? You know, so that's, again, like that, the ugliness finally comes out. The true colors come out of that character. So it goes from just like this, like, oh, she rescued me. And you know, here we are strangling each other in a house, right? Yeah, really insane movie. What was the ones I Nurse Ratched.
Come on. Yeah. Come on. Yeah, Nurse Ratched. Louise Fletcher killed that.
Man.
Absolutely deserved the Academy Award for that performance. Well, one of the, besides giving electroshock therapy and a lobotomy to the film's main character, we also have that whole scene near the end with her and Brad Dourif's character. At first, he's finally starting to seem normal. He's finally getting a hold of his problems.
Yeah.
And she just undoes everything in just a matter of few words.
You know, and the thing too, with it got personal.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought through that movie. I mean, and it's another one of those things. Like, you look at this character, Nurse Ratched. And you know, you see her initially, and it's like, well, she's here to help. She's the boss. She's going to bring all these people. She's going to help them recover and rehabilitate.
She is the total opposite of what a nurse is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She's supposed to be helpful. She's supposed to be there to help you get better.
Yeah.
And that's not what she wants.
No, she wants to keep them ill.
She wants to keep them where they're at. She doesn't want any growth. And she continually proves that throughout the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
Job security?
I,
that's the only reason I can think of for that. You know, I mean,
I know. I just think she's an evil
or
person.
Or she's just a sadistic person.
I think she's an evil, sadistic person.
Maybe something went wrong in her life at one point where she did have good intentions. And then she realized that these people, 90% of these people, never rehabilitate or ever, you know, are able to be productive members of society.
Nurse Ratched, I want my cigarettes.
Yeah. Wait, and imagine having to hear that fucking five times a day. I mean, it would probably jade the shit out of you. Like a lot of people in professional lives, they get jaded with what they do.
Yeah.
I don't think she was jaded, though. I think she was just a fucking bitch. And I think she wanted to be the controlling factor in those men's lives. That's all I think. And she is just twisted as fuck.
Yeah, very disturbing movie. Frank Booth. Anybody know who Frank Booth is, everybody out there? Well, we're going to tell
like
you.
You're like me.
You're like,
don't say please, fuckhead.
Oh, look, that was a good level. We're seeing that on the board there. What are you doing, Andrew? Mark that one to fix it.
He is the
now it's dark.
He is the torchbearer of the nightlife.
Heineken
in that movie.
Fuck that shit.
Pabst Blue Ribbon.
We could make a show out of just Frank Booth quotes, I think.
You want me to pour the beer? No, I want you to fuck it. Shit, yes, pour the fucking beer. Let's fuck!
Fuck anything that moves! pretty cool character.
He's just depressing the hell out of Isabella Rossellini and
scene after scene.
And he's the total, in a way, he's the total opposite of the Kyle MacLachlan character, but in another way, he's not. In many ways, they're very similar.
Well, that's when he said that. Like, you're like me.
Yeah.
He saw that, man. That's what made you know, Dennis Hopper's character, you know, Frank Booth, so heavy in that movie. You know, and just I mean, if you couldn't, there's about five movies worth of great sound bites from a character in that one film, Blue Velvet.
Yeah.
With that one character, Frank Booth. I mean, and yeah, they're funny. We laugh about them now because it was just done so fucking well, right? But it's serious shit. It's a really heavy movie. If you and anybody out there, and I know we've talked about Blue Velvet here before. If you haven't seen that, you're out. Fuck,
you're out of touch.
Yeah, I just went and saw it at Cinema Detroit on a DCP restoration.
Really?
Yeah, they played it for a little bit. They're playing it at the Music Box right now. One of the things I had heard about Dennis Hopper's character, Frank Booth, in Blue Velvet, was that a lot of it came from within. He said to David Lynch, I've got to play Frank because I am Frank. So much of that was just him channeling his own demons onto the camera.
And I don't, you could probably verify this, Andrew. I've heard, and it's just something I heard in my travels, that the dialogue, some of that stuff was just improv. It wasn't necessarily, you know, rehearsed or scripted or anything like that.
Yeah.
Some of that stuff just flew out of him, I guess. Is that something you heard too?
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, I something I can't verify, but I found it interesting nonetheless. But yeah, there's that, and it's a great story. I mean, it's not just all about Frank Booth, but it's
very much about the dynamic between what's beneath the facade of a pitch perfect small town America where everything is just plasticine and like a rom-com, that opening scene where everything is just so idyllic and beautiful. And then
the camera shoots, it goes down.
Down into the grass with the ants.
You read my mind. That was like a total analogy of the film, right?
That sums up the movie perfectly right there.
It did. Yeah, Frank Booth is, I mean, I'm going to say this over and over, like one of my favorite fucking villains of all time. And he's that one right there, I mean it. That's,
well, I think you can kind of make an analogy between Frank Booth and Darth Vader, really.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're
characters.
Who's
this Darth Vader you speak of?
Yeah. But seriously, they're like those bad guys that you look forward to seeing on screen.
Yeah.
But you're scared to death of them being on screen, correct?
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the shit that Hopper does in that movie, he is literally losing his mind, but you're sucked in. You're sucked in. Just like we said earlier, like the hook in a pop song, you're sucked in. You want to see what he's going to say next. And it's the same thing with Vader. You want to know who, what he's going to say next and who the hell he's going to force choke next.
Well, that
apology accepted, Captain.
Yeah, exactly.
With Frank Booth, it makes you think too, and that's what I and we've like Nurse Ratched, I just kind of went into a riff a few minutes ago about, you know, well, maybe this happened to her, you know, and that's what good characters do, though. I think that whether they're villain, not only just villains but good people, I guess, good guys.
I'm gonna jump over to Travis Bickle from Taxi Driver in relation to what you're saying about it makes you wonder what happened to them, because there's
what's the history here.
I mean, he talks about how he did some Vietnam work, and there's a scene later in the movie where he's shirtless and he's doing push-ups, and you see this big scar on his back. And unlike First Blood, where you see everything happening to John Rambo, you see explicitly him being cut and tortured. You don't know, and your imagination plays tricks on you, and is in many ways more frightening than actually knowing what actually happened
to this guy. And again, it's another one of those characters that just makes you think, like, well, dude, this guy's really fucked in the head, obviously. He's very disturbed. Mm-hmm. What is his story, or her story, whoever it may be, right?
I think he's just a twisted-ass sociopath. Who's all Travis Bickle.
Travis Bickle?
Yeah.
There was a, I think it started, though, when he was trying to reach out to someone, reaching out to Betsy, and that didn't go so well, so it... That was a tipping point for him. But there were a lot of contradictions in that character as well. Like, like he's exercising regularly, but he eats junk food.
Mm-hmm.
And just a number of contradictions throughout the movie that just keep him where he is.
Well, and that character, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of horrible things about that character we know and love. But, I mean, there was a lot of nobleness in him, too. We know how the movie ends. We know who he, you know, he did reach out to Betsy. Mm-hmm. And I think in a lot of ways he wasn't, whether it was the war he was a part of, he was obviously a veteran, something skewed him and he just didn't adjust right. And he didn't understand things the same way we do. Like, you can't take a first date
to a porno,
right?
That's another contradiction, that he complains about the nightlife and all the prostitution, and he spends so much of his time in porn houses.
Yeah. And he sits there, and there's dialogue, just him going on, the shit, the fucking people.
So,
one day the rain will come and wash all the scum off the streets.
Exactly.
Now, is that an inherent flaw in the character, do you think, that he's doing things like opposite of what he actually believes, or do you think they just fucked up when they made the movie and they weren't really thinking about that? God, or do you think Scorsese did that on purpose?
It was totally on purpose. Paul Schrader admitted it was on purpose to put those contradictions in there.
And what does that do, though? It makes the character really interesting. It makes you talk about him at great length, what we're doing right now.
Well, it explains his perpetual loneliness and isolation of his fellow humans.
Yeah.
And he wants to connect, but he keeps sabotage. It's self-sabotage that he's committing.
Yeah, it is. That can be really, we all know someone who just, and again, the human condition, we all know a person in our lives, or so, I know in my case, several people, that they just do that same thing. They want to be good people. You hear all their intentions, but they just perpetually fuck up over and over again and just keep setting themselves back further and further.
It's almost like they don't know any other way.
Yeah.
That's the only thing they know.
They know how to destroy. They don't know how to create. You know, I mean, I'm not going to get too philosophical. Oh, and we mentioned this Darth Vader guy briefly.
I mean, he is the most famous.
What movie was he in? I forgot.
I think it was My Little Pony video
that was out last week. Yeah.
It was in Message from Space.
You know,
what's there to say about Darth Vader? Jeez.
You know, Vader used to be scary.
A whole show on him.
Well, you know, the problem with Vader now is the whole prequel thing.
Yeah.
You know too much. Yeah. You know too much about him. And I think by giving us all that background, the mythology behind Darth Vader got kind of ruined.
We've talked about that, about all iconic characters. They all want to fucking explain things. And sometimes, even though I love Hellraiser 2, I've said this before, I like Hellraiser 2, but you learn too much. I kind of like that whole mystery. Like, we don't know where they come from. We don't know who the fuck they are. We don't know what they are. But they're really scary, and the mystery is sometimes more interesting just to not, you know, just to have the mystery, right?
Like you said in 2010, where they explain all the reasons why Hale did everything he did.
Yeah, so there's the mystery. We don't know what, now you know, all the questions are answered.
You can put a face on it and then move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Darth Vader's, in my opinion, he's just a cultural meme now. I mean, yeah.
He's the most iconic villain of all time.
Easily.
But too much background. Too much. We know too much now. He's not scary anymore. When my kids
There's humanity in that character now.
There is. Yeah. Admittedly, but when my kids see Darth Vader now, my younger kids, they're not scared of Darth Vader.
No.
Because they know that Darth Vader's just a little whiny teenage bitch. You know, seriously.
I hate them.
I hate them.
My love for you, it hurts so much.
I mean, yeah, and that you get all that. Well, wait, Darth Vader was in love?
Right.
What?
Yeah,
he's just a scary guy.
Yeah.
It kills people.
Oh, Annie. Come on. Fuck that. When they started calling him Annie, dude, fuck my life.
Can we switch gears a little bit?
Sure.
Well, I mean, it's not really, we're still the same shit.
But yeah.
One I mentioned, I really like was Bricktop. From Snatch, played by Alan Ford, who's been, he's an older actor.
Mm-hmm.
Snatch is like, wow, it's a 16-year-old movie now. It's a pretty old flick. I love that character. And one of the reasons I wrote it down was I've watched Snatch a million times. I think that movie's fascinating.
I love Snatch.
It's a great...
beautiful Snatch.
What a beautiful... Everybody get this out of their system.
Yep.
But
Guy Ritchie was still popular.
Yeah.
Before he met Madonna.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When he was doing really cool flicks.
Before Swept Away.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
His career was before Revolver. Swept Away.
Oh, fuck Revolver. My God. What the fuck happened to that movie? I was so excited.
Yeah.
I was so excited. No, we're not. We'll keep it on point. Bricktop, Snatch, Alan Ford. If you watch the bonus material, I have a box set of Snatch. And one of the things that Guy Ritchie talked about... Shut the fuck up! One of the things that Guy Ritchie talked about is that people in England, it's bad here. Like, you're really horrible here. Michael Vick proved that to us. But I guess in England, in the UK, if you get caught dogfighting, you're basically a child rapist. Like, that's how they look at you. They you are the most detestable, horrible human being ever. And that's one of the things that Guy Ritchie pointed out in his commentary on the film was, basically in the UK, people that run dog fights, they're like the worst ever. Like, they are just like the worst thing ever. And Bricktop, that character, there's just a lot of horrible things he does. Now, it's obviously, this is a comedy we're talking about. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of horrible shit that happens in that movie. There's a lot of very disturbing things this guy does. And I thought Alan Ford just played that, the way he just kind of grits his teeth as he's talking to people. But that character also had some really just cool lines, I thought. Like, would you are you going to make the tea? Well, yes. Do you want sugar? No, I'm sweet enough. They're in there, Governor. Goody gumdrops. Just these cool little sprinkles you get. That are these cute little lines that you hear from young people.
He's a bad guy that's dropping little
cool lines.
Sound like a little girl would say.
It's a fun villain.
Yeah.
It's a fun movie. Snatch is a riot to watch.
I watch Snatch all the time.
And we're off. But I think the real piece of that, though, is what I discovered is that, people that run dog fights in England, they're like the worst. I mean, any rape, you know, any rapist, whatever, any, the worst behavior you can
think of.
They're
the scum of society.
They are scum of society. But that character I thought was a lot of fun, as far as a villain in Snatch. And it's a great movie all around. So yeah, way to go, Alan Ford. Awesome shit. What else we got here? We got a 5 gazillion more. We're going to be here until 5
Kurtz.
O'clock in the morning.
Kurtz.
Marlon Brando. God, man.
Yeah.
Snatch. What's there to say?
What's there to say that hasn't already been said about
that
Colonel Kurtz?
Yeah. And he's only in the movie for a couple of minutes, really. I mean, it's not really...
He's the mysterious villain. He's the one that you don't have to see a lot.
You don't.
He's the one that was just does it all from the confines of the darkness.
That was one of the few movies where... the problems that beset that movie actually wound up benefiting it in the long run, namely with Brando showing up overweight and unprepared, didn't have any of his lines rehearsed, anything, and they were forced to light him in shadow because he was so overweight, and the Redux version of Apocalypse Now restores a scene where he's in broad daylight, which totally destroys the mystique. So for that reason, I don't recommend the Redux version, but anyway, those factors contributed to creating this really mysterious character that was almost like a ghost.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Totally. He lies in the shadows. He's lying in wait the entire time. And then you just see little, they just give you a little sprinkles of Kurtz.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The scene, probably the scene where Captain Willard, Martin Sheen, is tied up. Tied up in the rain.
And the head drops on
lap. He walks up and he's actually painted in camouflage for some reason. And what I thought was really great about that scene is that he looks down at him and then he kind of, the rain's coming down really heavy and he just kind of looks up at the rain a little bit and lets the rain run over his face and then looks back down and then that's when the head rolls.
Yeah.
It's just a beautiful, it's just masterfully, like, just choreographed, and I don't know if it was done intentionally or not, but it was. But that's one of those scenes too. You know, it's still very dark. You don't see much of him, but you do see his face in that camouflage makeup. Yeah, what's there to say about Kurtz? I mean,
he's awesome. Yeah,
the horror.
And it was just pure Brando. Just
beautiful.
Completely informing that character, creating that character, and coming up with all the dialogue himself. There were even points where he was mid-take, he would just say, I can't come up with any more dialogue today. totally improvised, scene by scene.
Faye Dunaway, Mommy Dearest,
playing Joker. Oh, Jesus.
No. What are these wire hangers? Wire hangers! Yeah.
Hard movie to watch. That was regarded for so many years as like this unintentionally funny movie where Faye Dunaway is chewing up the scenery, and now it's regarded as this horror movie, which it kind of always was. It just was misunderstood at the time.
I remember being a small child, and we didn't see Mommy Dearest in the theater, but it was when HBO was first getting into showing movies around the clock.
Yeah.
And Mommy Dearest was one of the first movies that I ever saw on HBO. And they played that thing on constant circulation, just like everything else. They had their 10 or 12 movies that they would play
all
the time.
Mommy Dearest was on all the time.
It was on all the time. Yeah. And we'd watch it all the time.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, that movie will fuck up your head. Yeah. Seriously. That she is evil in that movie.
She's horrible.
And
horrible.
It's even more horrifying that most of those things that happen in that movie happen in reality.
Yeah, it does.
You know, I've
heard that's what the problem was. It's such a feasible thing.
Yeah, I've heard that some of it was over dramatized. I had heard interviews with her daughter and her son.
Yeah,
that's a lot of this,
the movie business.
Yeah, was really they got a little overzealous with it. Mm-hmm. But that woman was seriously fucked in the head.
Mm-hmm. I want to switch gears again and indulge me on this one, because this one you guys are probably like, you fucking idiot. What's wrong with you? Mr. Svenning from Mallrats.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Played by Michael Rooker, right?
Who's been many great villains in movies. But
as I was grinding my gears on this right before, while you guys were talking. I'm like, hey, why didn't I mention Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer? What the hell's wrong with
mother
me?
Mother was
right?
a whore.
Yeah. But, I mean, in Mallrats.
That's not right, Otis. She's your sister.
I already need a shower. Oh, yeah. That's such a horrible flick. But in Mallrats, which, you know, Kevin Smith film, fun, comedy, who doesn't like Mallrats? Mr. Svenning is like this great fucking cool villain. It's just hysterical. He just gets, you know, hey, gosh darn, would you like a pretzel? I mean, shit, you know, all this shit they're pulling on this guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's just a couple of great scenes where he detests, you know, his daughter's boyfriend so bad, Brendan, right? He detests him so bad. There's just these great, like, they even, like, kind of played, like, a Godfather kind of theme behind mm-hmm. one of them as he was like, you will never. And he says some really great dialogue, too. That's just another one of those fun, I think, like, villains where, you know, it's all slapstick, it's all comedy. But, you know, you're rooting, you're obviously like, what a dick.
Oh, he is a total dick.
Yeah, he's a total, you know, but there's some really great, like, not like I'm big into Michael Rooker's ass or anything like that, but there's that great scene where he's like, you know, doing boxing in a towel and his towel falls down.
Michael Rooker has this thing for playing hard, cold characters.
Yeah.
In basically, I mean, his role in Mallrats, it's a lot similar to Henry in a way, because he's just very cold and calculated,
yeah.
and he's got that stare.
And he's got
you could argue plan. That it's similar to Slither as well.
Yeah.
As he starts to change.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God, yeah, you're right.
But, dude, Henry.
Yeah, I didn't mention that one, but
I mean,
I mentioned it now.
That movie, because that's reality, too, for mm-hmm. the most part.
Yeah.
That is a hard watch.
The movie sat on the shelf for a few years, too. It was, I think, made in 1986, and then it didn't find a distributor until 1990.
Well, yeah, because I remember I was reading Film Threat at the time, and
yeah.
Film Threat had done an article on Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Yeah.
So I didn't see it probably until 91,
yeah.
92, when it got released on VHS.
Or mm-hmm. something
yeah.
like that.
And I remember just watching it the first time, being like, holy
it's a
fuck.
It's a tough film to watch, man.
It's yeah. so real.
Yeah, we're talking incest, yeah. all these horrible things that happen in that movie.
Well, the scene in the movie that's most horrifying is when they're at home watching the tape of the family they just murdered. It's
oh God.
It's done almost in total unfettered reality,
yes.
unalloyed reality.
Yeah. Well, that's got a feel like I don't know if you guys ever. I've had to see a couple of them, the August Underground series.
Oh dear Lord,
jeez,
Fred Vogel.
Fred Vogel, Toe Tag Pictures.
Yeah,
there's a lot of genius in his work, but that shit is hard to watch, and it's kind of the same vibe that you'd get from that.
They're like terrible. Visual effects demos / found footage serial
yeah,
killer
same
movies.
Idea. Yeah, it's,
I've never seen any of them, and I really don't want to.
No, you're but don't. Don't.
They're pretty disgusting. Yeah,
pretty hard to watch, man.
Kind of banal too, because it's just you know
they're
these,
just gritty as hell. It's all you know. It's supposed to look like old video cameras.
Yeah,
so it's gritty
supposed,
looking.
They're supposed to look like tapes from a serial killer.
Yeah,
basically.
You know, not to go too far into that. Those are villains. It's done interesting because it'll like show them like walking around town, like walking on bridges or goofing off, or they're at a party and they're doing drugs and they're listening to Cannibal Corpse or something like that, and then they cut like to their basement
and
some dead person,
and they're like cutting up somebody
yeah.
or
yeah.
they're.
It's just so bizarre.
Yeah.
No thanks.
So. Here's a good question. Who's the bigger villain in the Alien movies, the Xenomorphs or the Company?
Thank you.
Holy shit.
Damn good idea.
In both Alien and Aliens, arguably the Company is more evil. The creature is just a survivor, like
Ash
says.
You're totally right about that. The creature just is doing what it does.
Yeah, it's just fighting to survive. The Company is, on the other hand, willing to sacrifice human lives.
To get a specimen.
Yeah.
So basically what you're saying is the Weyland Corporation is Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whether it's... whether
every
it's,
fucking show.
Yep.
Whether it's the big reveal with Ash and Alien yeah. or Burke and Aliens. Arguably, Burke and Aliens is a lot worse because of how many people die at his at his hands because of the decision he made to send the Jordan family to the ship on LV-426.
Yeah.
No, I would never look at Bishop as a bad guy. I mean, Bishop is like really in tune with Ripley and her plight, I don't think.
Yeah.
I never question Bishop's intentions.
Bishop is kind of like, it's kind of like what they did with Terminator 2, where the Terminator is the Android is the villain in the first movie, but then he has his redemption in the second movie.
Horseshit. fuck that movie. You're totally right, Andrew. Because, the Xenomorph, it's doing nothing more than just doing what it does to try to survive, like you said. The company truly is, and that's another great example, that it isn't just a person in front of you. This is a giant entity. And,
it's corporate evil.
I'm sure that was thought out very closely.
I'm sure it was.
This is something we're gonna make a statement with this. It's obviously a statement that corporations can be very evil. And in that case, they didn't give a shit. It was said in their report
on Crew Expendable.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It said it right there. And that was a scene where Ripley was watching that, and then Ash was right behind her.
Yeah.
That was that really awesome computer room with all the little blinking lights called Mulu.
Yeah.
We haven't mentioned, we have to. Please, I'm begging you guys. Daniel Day-Lewis.
I was just going to say the same thing.
I drink your milkshake. No more hitting. Right? No more hitting.
There will be blood. God, what a
so Standard offered $1 million for the little Boston leases. I told H.O. Tilford where he could shove that. We made a deal with Union on the pipeline. That whole lotion of oil from underneath our feet. I could quote Daniel Day-Lewis all day.
That's another one of those flicks. I mean, it's kind of like I throw that in Blue Velvet territory. There's some really killer one-liners. Like, it's riddled with great one-liners.
So who's the bigger villain in There Will Be Blood, Daniel Plainview or Eli Sunday?
Oh, well, if you want to ask me, it's going to be Eli Sunday.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
Get out of here, ghost.
Oh, dude, come on. I mean, that was another play. I mean, obviously, Daniel Plainview's character in that movie, which saw through all that horse shit. And he made a very big point to let him know that he was seeing through his bullshit.
He gets him to reveal it at the end.
Yeah, he does. I am a false prophet. God is a superstition. Say it louder. Say it like you mean it. I am a false prophet. God is. Yeah, say it like. Imagine that there is a whole. Your congregation's right here. And literally, that was done brilliantly. I forgot the actor's name who played Eli Sunday. Is that young
Paul kid? Dano.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. He always plays himself in every movie. He does.
As he's doing that, he's repeating that line, I am a false prophet, God is a superstition. Every time he does it, he just gets more and more broken down. And towards the end, he's like crying through it. Right, you just see him just kind of finally falling apart.
Stop crying, you sniveling ass.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, you're right. I mean, I listed Daniel Plainview in this as far as a villain, but really, you're right, and I'm glad this is a different perspective on this. Eli Sunday really is he is the blood of Lamb from Bandy's Tract. Yeah, I would have to switch up gears on that and say they're both pieces of shit. They're both horrible.
They're
people.
Both sleazy characters.
Yeah, they're fucking both terrible people.
Well, they both just want what they want.
Yeah, except one mines oil, the other one mines. To me, I mean, that's kind of the idea.
Well, he wanted the money. He wanted the money for selling his land.
Yeah, well, that was
and he
and that was
sold
the big, yeah.
He sold out to try and get the money for the land.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah, at the end. Yeah, totally. But there was always a contention with Eli Sunday and his father. That Daniel Plainview came in and more or less just kind of took over. He took over the town.
Raped it.
Right?
There's antagonism from the very beginning when Eli is challenging him about how much money he wants for the land.
Yeah.
And when he reaches out to shake Eli's hand and Eli holds his hands like he's going
to
start praying.
He wants to pray. Like,
you see him pull
shit.
His hand away and you hear him growling under his breath.
Yeah. So there, that brilliant movie and those, they're both sleaze bags. They really are. I mentioned Gangs in New York also. Another day.
Bill the Butcher, man.
Woo!
Seriously.
What a party.
What a fucking great character.
Yeah.
Great character.
You need to pay for the privilege of my time. I think that's what the line was.
Oh, dude, he's so good in that movie.
Yeah.
So fucking good.
One of my favorite cuts, like one of the favorite scenes is when he's making his dinner and he just throws that piece of meat on the grill and it sits on there for about 10 seconds and he pulls it off and starts cutting it. It's like, you know, what the hell, dude? Obviously, he likes his meat raw.
Just like you.
You're making me think of Jake LaMotta and Raging Bull. Don't overcook the steak. You overcook it.
It's like a piece of charcoal. What are you doing? It
defeats its own purpose. Anyway, not to get off track. No, Bill the Butcher.
There's one right there. Raging Bull, Robert De Niro. Would that be some type of villain?
In a way.
He was a villain to his family. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you right now.
He does a lot of really, really horrible shit in the movie. Yeah. Particularly to his wife, played by his brother, Kathy Moriarty. Yeah.
Joe Pesci playing his brother. He, literally beat him half to death.
You fucked my wife?
And that was the thing about that character was so, he was so delusional. Like, it was almost to a point where he wanted her to cheat on him.
Yeah.
And she never did. And that's when she finally was like, okay, fine. You know what? I sucked all their cocks. I cheated on them. His cock's bigger than yours, man. All that crap. I mean, she just finally gave in and said, I'm just tired of this.
Your
fine.
Mother sucks fucking big elephant God. Dicks. Yeah, you got that?
Thanks, Joe.
Speaking of Joe Pesci, let's talk about Tommy and Goodfellas.
Oh,
and
yeah. That's another one you talked about.
And that whole scene where he's asking how he's funny.
Oh, God.
Am I funny? How am I funny? Am I funny to you? Huh? Am I funny?
I'm here to fucking amuse you.
You could ram your head in the detention on that and crack your skull in that scene.
Mm.
That how they created that, and it's iconic. I mean, always people are always mention that scene as far as tense stuff.
There's a thing about Pesci, and it's really strange. He's not a big guy.
No,
he's this little dude. Yep. Little guy.
Yeah.
Really, really little guy. There's no brawn to him, really.
Yeah.
But when he plays these roles in like Goodfellas and Casino, he's intimidating by the way he talks, and he's a bull. He is a bull-headed little motherfucking dwarf, and he will kick the living shit out of you.
Where's the strong box, you fucking varmint, you?
Well, there was a. He was also was a. I might misquote this. Nine heads in a duffel bag.
Eight
heads in a duffel bag.
And he was the villain in Michael Jackson's Moonwalker.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to toss it out there.
Eight heads in a duffel bag was really fun. I mean, he played like kind of this badass. And there's that really great scene where he's got the guy strung up upside down. And he's like, "We're gonna play a game. The game's called Be Honest with Me." the rules are simple, right? But yeah, Pesci, there is that thing about. Casino. I know people. I don't want to try to equate them. They're very different films, but there's a lot of the same flavor. Casino and Goodfellas. Actors, right?
Same director.
People ask me like, which one do you like better, Goodfellas or Casino? And a lot of times I lean more to Casino, even though it's more of a drama, right? Mm-hmm. But Joe Pesci in that movie, I thought he was even more extreme as far as.
Oh, absolutely. I can agree with that.
You want to fuck on you? They've made songs that sample that crap over and over again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. But that was another, that character, my brain's going to stop. What was the character's name in a Casino he played? Anybody know? Hurry up. Hurry up, you want to fuck on you?
Am I funny? How am I funny?
Where's the strong box, you fuck? That's a great line. I love that one too, yeah. You fucking mama loot?
Dance, yahoo, you motherfucker.
Oh my God, dude. Yeah, Michael Imperioli played,
Nicky
Spider.
Santoro.
Nicky Santoro, which was based on a real character.
The fuck you looking at? Come on, make that coffee to go, let's go. What the fuck you doing with the coffee? It's a joke.
I did.
You're always fucking late. You're going to be late for your own fucking funeral. Really
beautiful.
I did that article on the Movie Sleuth a while back, like 2 years ago, What the World Needs Now is More Joe Pesci.
Yeah.
And it's true, man. Like, we don't get villains like that anymore. We don't really have somebody.
So colorful.
There's a rumor going around right now that Scorsese is reuniting with De Niro and Joe Pesci. Oh,
and God. Pacino.
It'll all be over with.
That's what they're
saying. It'll all be over with, man. Hello, Clarice.
And we're talking about,
Sorry, did I just fuck you up?
I was trying
to do a segue there, and I fucked it up like I always do.
No, I was going to. See, we mentioned Pacino. We're talking about gangsters. We didn't mention Tony Montana.
Okay, then we're going to talk about the obvious. All right, fine. Let's talk about Tony Montana.
Antonio Montana.
Fuck you.
What you call yourself?
I am a Cuban refugee. You know? That's Tony Montana.
He's kind of the poster child for the height of American excess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, originally it was just going to be a remake, but Oliver Stone turned that into...
An Oliver Stone movie?
Pretty much. I mean, you look at that movie and Natural Born Killers. I mean, the styles are different, but they're both about... They're both indulgence. Debunking the American dream, yeah. And they're both about excessive overindulgence.
Yeah. And that really kind of bubbles up to the surface in Scarface, mm-hmm. especially in the scene where we all, the womb is so polluted, all that shit. But that's one of the, he's like, you all a bunch of fucking assholes. And he kind of just like shits all over
everybody. You need people like
me. Yeah, you need a bad guy. You know, that whole thing kind of bubbles up. And I thought that was really, and that's another, the love he has for his sister. I mean, you feel that. He loves her so much.
I feel that.
But that guy obviously, that character knew nothing but violence. Mm-hmm. He didn't really know any true love, like any real tenderness in his life. So what tenderness he had for his sister, he responded violently when there was any kind of threat to his sister in any way, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how we see how the movie kind of, how it just kind of crash lands at the end, and his sister was a big part of that.
He was a really bad influence on her, too. I mean, giving her money, and he's trying to help her out, and all he's doing is enabling her to...
do dumb shit.
Go on a downward spiral of her own.
Yeah.
And very briefly, she seems to get it together at the very end, but... And
yeah, you're right.
Kills his best friend and
that was fucking over.
Resets
with.
Everything even worse than before.
Well, and that's a real cool time thing there because he shoots him, and I mean I would have been pissed either way. Like, I don't give a fuck how many rings you put on her finger. You fucking son of a bitch, you're my best friend.
Yeah.
Right. But that was part of the scene. He shoots him. She comes down freaking out, and she's like, "We just got married," and that really you see like. Al Pacino's character.
It's devastating.
It just, he doubled over to a point where he couldn't even walk. They had to walk him away because he knew he just fucked up. Like that was the end. That was the worst thing he's ever done. Right.
Yeah.
And that's where he just totally that's when he just went, that was it.
I mean, he came short of killing the two kids and a woman in an earlier scene where they're following the car. He didn't go that far, but he did really do a lot of damage to his sister, and he couldn't forgive himself for that.
But that's, and I always like to look for, with all these villains we're talking about, with the vast majority of them, I always try to see some kind of, I like to look at things. Like, I always like to look at both sides of things. And look
try
at
to find redeeming
qualities. Yeah, try to find
character.
Some kind of quality.
Try to find a winning quality in
the
character.
And that's one I'm right there. It's like, no women, no kids. I'm not doing that. And that scene plays out. Yeah, that scene plays out, and he's like, this is fucked up, man. This is fucked up, And he finally says, I'm not doing this, and we know what happens, right?
Yep.
And it's his undoing, ultimately, but... He couldn't break that code of honor. That was just one area he would not cross.
Yeah, there is some type of honor, like you said. There is, I'm not that, another line, and I didn't mention that these are villains too also, from Dust Till Dawn, the Gecko Brothers, right?
Yeah.
George Clooney, at the end of that movie, Juliette Lewis looks at him and goes, he's going to El Rey. That's where they were going, right? Mm-hmm. After he gets out of the whole thing, they get out of that whole shitty situation they were in.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, take me with you. And he's like, do you know what El Rey, what kind of a place El Rey is? And she's, kind of looks at him blankly, and he's like, I'm a bastard, but I'm not a fucking bastard. Mm-hmm. And he just, so he was saying, like, look, I'm not the, and that character was a...
I'm not a smart man, but I know what love is.
Yeah. But that guy, he had a code also, though, in that movie. And they were obviously murderers and criminals. They were thieves, but there was that scene with Quentin Tarantino. He basically raped and killed that woman. And he comes in there and he's like, what the fuck is your problem? I'm a professional thief. I don't kill people unless I have to. So there's a code, like the same idea. These are bad people, but they still have lines that they have drawn. Like, I can't go that far.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there is, that makes it even more, conflicted and interesting about these villains we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of very conflicted and very interesting. I mentioned it a second ago and I fucked a segue up. Hello, Clarice.
I can smell your cunt.
Oh, God, I knew you were... you really had to drop the C-bomb on the show.
I had to. I had to.
Okay, wait, Migs. Migs, you stupid fuck! Anthony Hopkins, Silence of the Lambs, Dr. Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
Another one of those ones where it's like, what else can you really say about that character and that actor and that movie?
Well, one of the best scenes with that character is the very first time you see him, because you see all these other characters in prison bars that are just
animals, all over,
climbing the walls, really like caged animals in a zoo. Then it comes upon him behind this clean plexiglass, and he's just very calmly standing in the middle of the room, proper,
totally collected,
upright, clean cut,
and just says very politely, "Good morning."
Good morning. Yeah, very soft. You know, that delivery, just laying it in there. You know, and that really, and then we see what, if you haven't seen, again, if you haven't seen The Silence of the Lambs.
Well, if you haven't seen The Silence of the Lambs.
Quit listening to this show.
Yeah.
This show right now.
Yeah.
Because that, what happens and what we discover from that character, and it, I even liked Hannibal. I loved Hannibal. That was more of a love story. It was more of a drama.
Thing about Hannibal, and this is part of what made him such a great villain in Silence of the Lambs, and in a way they sort of deflated the character in Hannibal, is the moment that he's released and walking around free, he can do whatever he wants, sure, but part of the charm of the character was he could do so much with both of his hands tied behind his back, locked up, in a straitjacket, and he's still in total control of the situation in every scene. And that was the power of the character, was how much it could manipulate other people in the situation despite being handcuffed and captive.
Yeah.
So when they set him free, that charm is taken away.
There's something that I really like about Hannibal, though.
I love that. It's a beautiful movie. It looks
It looks
cool.
Looks great. That was Tony Scott that directed that, correct?
Ridley Scott.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think he did a great job with it. And
he did the best that he could with the material.
Yeah, he did the best he could with the material. Obviously, it was a little more over the top with the Ray Liotta scene in the end of the movie.
They
kind of...
That was fucked up.
They kind of went places that they wouldn't have gone with The Silence of the Lambs. Mm. It was a little more fantasy. Yeah. That's how
it
seemed.
Well, I think, too, I think people...
The book is even more outrageous than the movie.
Is it?
Yeah.
I think people were coming out of Silence of the Lambs, people were expecting this fucking bloodbath, and that's not what Hannibal was about. So I think maybe one of the things that was thought of was like, okay, we really have to put up the fireworks in here somewhere to really, you know, appease the gore hounds, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened with the end there with Ray Liotta's scene, was that. Like, and I remember when that movie came out and that scene, like, we were around work and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's all we were talking about. Did you see the fucking scene? The end scene? Oh, my God.
Oh, dude. And I mean, in Hannibal, too, Mason Verger, Gary Oldman as that character.
Oh, God.
That was a great character also.
Yeah.
But yeah, Hannibal.
That's a great villain. He was a total.
Yeah.
I mean, oh my God.
One where it brings up the argument, who's worse, Hannibal or his adversary?
Yeah, and that really does kind of come to light in that scene with all the pigs and shit. You know, there's
pigs and shit.
Pigs and
Cordell,
shit.
Cordell!
Yeah. I mean, he just, you know, hey, you can always push him off the edge. Say I did it. And he's like, oh, you're fucking right, you know?
Yeah.
Because that doctor, he's like, I'm not, you know, there's a scene where the doctor's like, look, this has gone too far. I don't need any part of it. You're already involved. No, you're involved. You're gonna. So now this guy is under duress now. He's just a doctor. He's just a personal doctor. He don't want to be a part of a murderer, you know?
Mm.
Nice guy. So he kind of sees.
If you were a nice guy, you would not be
working
for him.
Yeah. Well, imagine the paycheck. Come on.
True.
I mean, yeah, look.
He gets paid in pig shit and bacon.
We mentioned Hellraiser. That has to be mentioned. I mean, Pinhead. I mean, what a great villain character. I mean, a beautiful art. A poet, really. I've always equated Doug Bradley's delivery on that. He really made Pinhead not only...
Demons to some, angels to others.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this grotesque character that speaks so eloquently... very poetic, like. I've always just stood in awe of that character. I can watch Hellraiser, any of the Hellraisers, honestly, and just see the beauty of that character. And we've talked about Hellraiser at great length.
A lot.
I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but that's, I mean, you have to mention it.
Despite all the pain he inflicts, he's very detached from the people he's doing it to. And Frank in that movie is the real villain.
It's not
Pinhead. It's Frank who gets his just desserts and
come to daddy. Come to daddy. Con!
Where are you, beautiful?
Con!
I think...
Come on.
Oh, kind. I was still talking about Pinhead, but whatever.
Oh, you're still talking about Pinhead? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, just okay, whatever, Con.
Con.
Con's a piece of shit.
That movie really messed me up when I was younger. That was a really, there was just something about the violence in The Wrath of Con. Like the fight.
They're young, enter through the years, then wrap themselves around the cerebral cortex.
Oh, that was, I was getting to that. Oh, dude. Dear God. That was hard. Chekhov, man. But sorry, dude. Sorry, bro. Mm. You had a rough fucking day, man.
Dude, you might want to see an ear doctor.
There was just the Wrath of Khan.
Creatures in our bodies to control our minds. Made us say lies, do things. He thought he controlled us, but he did not.
There's just the final scenes of that movie with Khan and the ship, and as the Enterprise finally prevails.
He's Captain Ahab in the Star Trek universe.
Beautiful. You're right. There's all the, but there's all these things. Hit the override. Hit. There's all these lines that fly around there, and they're fucking done, dude. But he went down fighting because he's Khan. He can't. He's the greatest. I mean, you talk about an overinflated sense of ego. I mean, that guy thought he could do no wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, and going back even to the series, that I thought that was a very cool villain. Mm-hmm. Especially in the sci-fi universe of Star Trek. Jeez, oh Pete, you're looking at the clock, Chris. We can just keep riffing here, man.
Oh, I'm good. I'm not looking at the clock.
Oh, I thought you were looking at the clock. You're like, fuck you guys, shut up. I don't want to talk. No, I'm tired of talking about
Bill. One that's not on the list. And I don't know if you guys have seen this. Have you guys ever seen the movie M with Peter Lorre? It's Fritz Lang movie where Peter Lorre plays a serial killer who's a pedophile, and he's killing children right and left, and the town decides they're going to take the law into their own hands. And the whole movie, he's just this really mysterious figure who's lurking the streets and has balloons around and is just trying to lure kids into a corner alleyway that he can murder. But it's another one of those films where your allegiance with the villain and the audience, or with your allegiance with the villain, is put on, what's the word I'm looking for?
You sympathize.
You sympathize. Yeah. Yes, thank you. Thank you. You find yourself sympathizing with him in the latter act, even though he's a murderer and a child molester.
How? Well, I'll have to watch
That's a great part about film, though, because these people that are masterful at making movies can do that. They can write that shit into the script. They know how to manipulate us into
feeling sympathy for
That's good. That's detestable
fantastic
character.
Writing. Fantastic writing. That's all. That's all it is. How could I have? I mean, I knew we were going to eventually get.
And
this.
Peter Lorre is so young in it, and he would play villains in movies for many, many years to come. But that's still the darkest and most horrific one that he's done.
And that's a classic too.
I never seen it. I'll have to see it.
Need to.
I've got it.
Give it to me.
Okay.
Now.
No.
Give it to me now.
No, I've got it here. I've got the Criterion disc of it.
Really?
You can borrow it.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It's really great.
Anton Chigurh.
Oh, Jesus. Such a great, great character.
Step out of the car, sir. I need you to step out of the car, sir.
That's another one for me. It's like, I'm speechless, man. When I saw No Country for Old Men for the first time, I was with my fiance. And we
that's both funny because I saw it with her too.
What's the most you have lost on a coin toss?
That we both just sat there, just kind of going, looking at each other, going, and I mean, I've spent a lot of time studying that character and watching all the bonus crap and reading stuff. And one of the things I like to point out, and this is kind of how they wrote it in and how Javier played it, was that character is more or less ethically, he has no home. Like, if you look at that character, he really has no nationality. I mean, I guess you could try to cue
out. He's kind of a blank slate.
He looks Mexican, I guess, but there's just the haircut, the way he dresses, his mannerisms, the way he talks, the way he behaves. He's very vanilla all around the edges, very rounded off. Like, you really can't put your finger on.
And even when he talks, he's very just droning and straightforward. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's not really that threatening when he talks, but by being like that, you become more fearful of him.
Yeah.
In a way, he's kind of an ultimate sociopath because he's has no connection with his fellow man, doesn't have really any motivation for what he does in the movie. And in one of the final scenes, he's just walking away. All he can do is just continue. He's a force of nature that cannot turn back.
You mentioned Kurt's like a ghost. I always kind of thought the same way about Anton Chigurh. He's like a ghost. Like, he just kind of can just, and that is like, he has that horrible accident at the end, and he still just, and that's the only time in that movie at the end where you do see a little bit of humanity, I think, come out of him, because he's obviously in a lot of pain, right? Mm-hmm. He just had a really bad accident, which just came out of nowhere. And those two kids, it's like, oh my God. Because that's the thing. He's like, you know, he gives them some money, and so let me get that shirt, right? Mm-hmm. To sling his arm. And he's like, you guys didn't see me. But he was in pain. You could see some emotion coming out of him because of that, right? Like, he's in pain. But he was grateful to a certain degree with, you know, those kids, even though he gave him like a $50 bill or something like that. And he just kind of disappeared. And that was the end of it, right? That's the only time in that movie where you really, the rest of it is that drone. Mm-hmm. He just drones through the whole flick. And there's that scene with, oh my God, Woody Harrelson, where he's like, you know, do you know how fucking crazy, no, do you know how crazy you sound right now?
Yeah.
He shoots him. Whatever. I mean, what's there to say about that character? Again, I'm speechless when it comes to that guy. That's one of the most disturbing characters I've ever seen. And there was a lot of thought put into that character. Mm. But there's not really anything. That's the thing about that character, is we've talked at length with some of these characters. Like, well, this is, there's things you can sympathize with them to a certain degree, or you find something, some redeeming quality. But this is such a blank, like you said, a blank slate.
Yeah, with him, he's just cold,
maniacal.
He just moves from scene to scene, and he looks at the violence that he's committing as just...
It's business.
It's just business. It's part of his everyday. It's like eating lunch.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to shoot you with this fucked up weapon I've got.
Yeah.
And it's
That's
just,
one of the most frightening parts of that movie is the shotgun.
Yeah, it's just normal, everyday business for me.
The only time in the movie that he shows any real emotion is the first murder he commits, when he's in the police station. He's choking an officer with his handcuffs. He has this look on his face that's almost lustful, like he's climaxing.
Yeah. So there's two. Well, I mentioned the end. I mentioned the end where, he was kind of like. I mentioned the end where he kind of shows some humanity too, because he's in pain.
Yeah.
But yeah, at the beginning, and that really throws you for a loop, because like. Yeah, you're right. There is like that look of like just that maniacal look on his face. Like, his eyes are wide open. There's something going on. So when you go into the movie, you're like, well, I'm going to be dealing with this fucking maniac the rest of the movie. And then the rest of the movie, it's just this drone of a character. It makes it so conflicted. There is, I guess there is a certain redeeming quality if you think about it, because he did give people a choice. With the coin toss with some of those people.
That's right.
You know, he did give them an opportunity, you know, and there is that, the old man where he's like, you know,
don't put it back in your pocket.
No, don't do that, sir. Right? And, you know, if you put it in your pocket, it just becomes another quarter.
Which
it is. You know, so there is that, like, you know, this is the best I can do for you. Like, with the wife. This is the best I can do for you. Call it. So there is a certain, I mean, I'm talking like a sliver of, like, I'm going to do the best I can for you, but there's not really much you're not getting out of this shit. And that's the thing with him. Like, once you've seen him, it's over with. I mean, you really don't, if you're involved with this guy in any way, you're going to die.
Something bad is coming.
Yeah, you're screwed.
No matter what, you're dealing with this dude.
You're in so deep that there's no way you're coming out. And he said that. He's like, look, that's the best I can do for you. You have no options. You had a chance. You're fucked. Forget it, dude.
Yeah.
That character, I can go on for days about how awesome, you know, how they are them.
Didn't No Country for Old Men and There Will Be Blood come out the same year?
They did.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
They were actually shot on the same locations, too. And there were a couple times where Paul Thomas Anderson and the Coens bumped into each other. Like, what are these guys doing on our same locations?
That's pretty cool.
I can't believe we've actually, like, this entire massive list that I thought we would barely even touch. Like,
oh, no.
We've just, there is one we didn't mention here.
Norman Bates.
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah.
What a classic movie. And it, you know, it's a bit different than the other Hitchcock stuff too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. In like the androgyny of the movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nobody had really touched on that at that point.
That was the first movie to show a toilet being flushed.
and probably the first movie to show a woman being murdered in a shower too.
Yeah,
which pretty much fucked everybody's head up after that. You don't. There's no coming back from something like that.
There was a lot of controversy about the line at the end where they're trying to figure out why he's dressing up as his mother and killing, and one character says, "Well, he's a transvestite." Like, never heard that line before in a movie. So it was really breaking a lot of taboos.
Yeah.
At the time, it was a real groundbreaker.
Well, what I really like about that movie is that the setup story is very Hitchcock. It feels like a Hitchcock movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But once we get to the Bates Motel and things start transpiring there, it starts to like take on a classic horror feel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a lot different. It's a very textured movie. And it also inspired a lot of what we see now in horror.
Mm.
And Jesus Christ, Anthony Perkins, what a phenomenal actor.
Yeah, genius. Yeah.
I mean, even when he did shitty movies later on, like the, what was the Jekyll and Hyde movie that he was in? Oh, I always forget the name of it. It's a creepy ass movie. It played like on Cinemax and stuff.
Break out your little phone and figure it out.
Yeah, man. I'm going to.
Mary Riley?
No.
I know he was in Crimes of Passion.
Edge of Sanity.
Okay.
It was called Edge of Sanity. Yeah. And that had a lot of like porno, like Skinamax elements to it too.
Yeah.
Mm.
He did a lot of stuff like that. He was, Crimes of Passion being another one, the Ken Russell film with Kathleen Turner. He was the antagonist in that.
But yeah, Norman Bates, I really liked Norman through the first three movies.
Yeah.
Because they stayed pretty hard set in the rules of his world.
Yeah.
You know? And a lot of bad things would always happen around Norman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then when they made that movie, the Psycho 4, The Beginning.
Yeah.
Dude, it got really bad. It got really, really bad. And it was a straight-to-cable movie.
Well, what was the scene?
There weren't any more after that.
No.
I forgot which one it was where... I'm going to blank. There's a scene where he's eating tomato soup. And she, I'm sorry, I was away from the microphone. I was thinking too hard. He was eating tomato soup and a cheese sandwich. And, I'm going to totally blank. Basically, just somebody gives him something to eat and he just hits him in the head with a fucking shovel.
Yeah, that was the end of, that was the end of Psycho 2 when his real mother comes to him.
Yeah. That scene really kind of
And he makes
me
her
up.
Soup and a sandwich and sets it on the table. And
there's something so humble about that.
Yeah.
Tomato soup and cheese sandwiches.
How's your sandwich, mother?
Yeah.
Crank. Yeah,
so I'm drawing a blank on the character's name. I'll just say Kevin Spacey in Seven.
Oh, dear God. You're right. That's one.
What's in the box?
What's in the box? What's in the box? Yeah. That's another one.
One of the few movies where the villain technically wins.
Yeah. You're totally right. And I didn't mention that one. Obviously a fantastic movie. Here comes Chris to the rescue. Come on, hurry up. Hurry up. Come on, dude. What's up? Okay, we're just going to go for
take my time now. I'm going to waste the last 5 minutes of this show.
Yeah, we're going to sit here in dead silence and breathe into the mics.
His name was Boxman.
Mm.
He puts heads in boxes.
That was the actual character's name.
No, fuck off.
I mentioned Kevin Spacey in The Usual Suspects. Verbal Kint.
His name was John Doe. Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
In Seven, his name was John Doe.
So Kevin Spacey in both those, Verbal Kint was the shit.
Yeah, Verbal Kint was the shit.
Another really fun movie. I mean, it was a crime movie, but there was a lot of great slapstick in that flick. And the way it ends, obviously, it's like, holy shit.
You don't know he's the villain until the very end. It's the big twist.
Well, thanks, guys. Thanks. I've never seen the fucking movie. Now you ruined it for me.
You never saw it?
Spoilers.
You never saw it?
No, never. Never.
Well,
eat my shit.
I don't like you anyway, so John dies at the end. Fuck you. Whatever. Yeah.
John Doe's head goes in the box.
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
Don't do that. He's going to win. I a few more I threw up.
You're a fucking t-shirt.
few more I mentioned here. I did mention Jack Torrance, Jack Nicholson in The Shining. Mm-hmm. That's another no-brainer. Mm-hmm. Come on, dude.
I'm just going to bash your brains in.
Don't want to hurt you. Yeah, I mean, we can go all day about that. I got to mention Christopher Walken somewhere in this list. And I played so many villains in movies. But I love The Prophecy. I've mentioned that here before, too. I know. Fuck all you people. Fuck all you people. The Prophecy 1, 2, and 3. I don't give a shit how crappy they were reviewed. I don't care. I love those movies. I love how big the ideas were. I love the characters. I like Angel flicks. And I like Christopher Walken playing Gabriel. And he did a killer job in that flick. I don't care how corny it got sometimes. He was a great villain. He was a really cool villain. And especially
he's always a good villain.
Especially in the original, some of the... he just kind of... just. You know, he's supposed to be this beautiful angel, but there's just so much hatred in this character. And he's so conflicted. And there's so much love, like, between these angels in the movies. You see them, like, affectionate to, like, you know, there's a
making
scene,
love to each other.
Yeah, making love, like, just yeah, over the car.
I love angels that, fisting that, angels. That's my favorite. God damn it. I love angel fisting porn.
Shut the fuck up, Chris. There's a scene from the first Prophecy with Eric Stoltz and Christopher Walken talking. And he actually, like, puts his hand on his face and they caress each other because these are supposed to be these you know these beings that are that know nothing and they all love each other so that, you know say whatever you want there's just so much beauty I think in that and then he kills him that's like what the fuck you know so I love Christopher Walken as far as a villain in The Prophecy off the first three at least he wasn't in the other ones
I'm gonna mention we were talking about villains that are really charming and sweet about what they do. I'm going to talk about Asami from Audition.
Oh, my God. Oh, God.
Because she's so sweet and charming and friendly as she's driving acupuncture needles into her lover's stomach, she's into so his hot. Eyeballs. And she's just giving these little chirping kitty, 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 kitty sounds as she's doing all these really horrible things.
Yeah, hard to watch.
Very all hard right. to watch.
Hard to watch.
We're at 90 minutes. Let's wrap this shit up.
This is a fucking ball, man.
Yeah, it really was.
And I'm really happy we did this week because last week I know it was a total... For you guys that really even care yeah. about us anymore, I know last week... No apologies at all. We had a good time. I don't care. But we do know we kind of went... past the weeds in the lake. I mean, it was like, what the hell happened?
It was entertaining, for
just
sure.
Kept getting off topic, you mean? Yeah,
well, not...
it was just more... It was filthy.
It was filthy.
Filth,
and there's got to be out of the hour and 10 minutes that show was, there's probably 20 minutes of laughter. In
oh,
that,
yeah. I was going to say 10 minutes laughing. Of actual like content. Too.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
It was fun. It was cool.
All right. We're going to wrap this up. I'm Chris with The Movie Sleuth. Visit us at www.themoviesleuth.com. Questions, comments, or concerns, or suggestions, email me at chris@spoilerfreemoviesleuth.com.
What's in the box?
This episode of Real Crime was brought to you by KN Air Filters. Find them at knfilters.com.
Visit us at www.themoviesleuth.com and find The Movie Sleuth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and iTunes.